Welcome to Drink Something Amazing. My name is Alex Van Amberg. I'm a certified sommelier with the Quartermaster Sommeliers and a certified specialist of wine with the Society of Wine Educators.
And my name is Christy Van Amberg, and I am a Renaissance mom.
You totally are.
Yeah.
So many things that you do, and you're so good at all of them.
Thank you so much.
Well, it was really interesting because we were talking about the idea that you paint and people compliment you on your talent. And what was it you said? You realized that...
There is no talent. It's just I paint every night.
It's just work.
Yeah.
And that's the real trick.
It's tools.
It's not about what you... It's not about a natural gift. It's about...
A natural gift, for sure.
Well, the idea that talent trumps... that training trumps talent, I think, is actually relevant in a serious way towards wine training. Because if you think about it, a lot of people think...
By the way, that was a really good setup.
Uh-huh.
I wasn't sure where you were going with this, but I get it now. Okay, go ahead.
Well, if you think about it, because a lot of people assume that you can taste these things in wine, that you must have a lot of innate talent, that you have amazing taste buds.
And that you have a good palate.
And that it's a gift you have, and other people, and you're so ready to dismiss what you don't have. You're saying it's like, oh, I could never do that. I can't find those things in wine. I don't know if that exists. It's all about training. It's all about taking the time to do the work and show up to the party and do the work. So that's where you're at. That's great. Start today. Start by listening to what your senses are. No one is born innately with an amazing palate. I mean, maybe one in a billion. And, you know, in women, actually, you've already got a natural advantage over men because it's scientifically proven that you have more taste buds per square inch than men have. So you can actually taste and smell more. There's a reason you think the house is dirty before men do, and that's because you're more sensitive biologically than men are.
I don't really agree with that. I mean, maybe the smell, but you can look around the house. You can look at the toilet and see, wow, maybe it needs a little brushing out.
I'm just saying that women... Because they're biologically, they have more sensors and more receptors, can actually experience more of the spectrum than men can.
The sensory smell, but not
taste.
Vision. That's what I'm saying.
Vision, that's training. What I'm saying is that...
I'm saying you could look at the toilet and see, wow, I should clean this.
I'm saying you could put the forks back when you're done. You know, but that's okay. Don't put it down. Put it away.
Don't put it down. Put it away.
Okay. Yeah. There you go. There's your mantra for the day. So anyway, back to wine. So the idea that you think you don't have a natural gift for it and you can't train that, that's BS. You have everything you ever need in your toolbox already. All you need to do is take the training, take the time, put the effort in, and you too can become really boring at cocktail parties just like me.
You're not boring. People love you.
That's amazing.
Everyone loves you.
So the whole concept is we're here to make wine fun and not frightening by giving you the tools and the talents you need to actually enjoy it and know why you're enjoying it, as opposed to drinking for effect. You can drink for flavor. You can drink for the
experience.
I guess, yeah, the experience of it, as opposed to the regret of it tomorrow.
Exactly. So, and drinking for the experience, you drink less and then you don't get a headache.
Good
point.
That's
all I'm saying.
And as you mature, you find you have less capacity for drinking for distance.
Boy, that's so true.
So the way we do this is we actually go through a couple of wines together. We go through a wine together and we evaluate the wine based on what our senses are telling us. And then we talk about where the wine comes from and the history and how it got the way it is. Typically, Christy has no experience with wine, although she is, after several years of doing this podcast, she's certainly getting a lot better. Mm-hmm. And I'm a wine nerd, so we're going to go through this wine together, and we're going to use what we call the five S's, which is basically walking through your sensory perceptions. You're going to see it, you're going to sniff it, you're going to sip it, you're going to savor it, and then you're going to spit or swallow the wine. And each of these steps helps you take a moment to reflect on the wine and what it's bringing to you.
Yeah, let's do it.
Then you can decide whether you like it or not.
Give me my wine.
Yes, dear. So we've got
little
two
day drinking.
We got two wines in a glass here.
Is it what, 11 a.m.? Woo! He's mouthing to me that it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
But I'm just saying that I think that day drinking is kind of fun because we usually do this podcast at night. Morning.
Good morning. So what we have in our glass is
a very sparkly, golden, pale, light.
I would say this actually, it's a more like a pale lemon than golden, because golden gives an image of a, like if you look at your ring, it gives you that darker, richer, more buttery yellow color is a golden color. This is more of a pale straw, pale lemon.
Yeah, I was going to say straw. And pale lemon is good too. Like the inside of a lemon, not the skin of the lemon.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
It's almost white. So, and there's no sediment, there's no discoloration. So if you look at the wine kind of at an angle, the core of the wine is a slightly darker, but that has to do with the depth of the wine, and then it gets lighter and lighter as it goes to the edge, and it's almost a watery white on the edge. This is a beautifully translucent, clear, light yellow wine that is, it's very pretty in the glass, and there's no sediment in it, so it's probably been filtered and fined.
It looks like glass.
Yeah, that's a great one. And then, this is a very aromatic wine. We haven't even got done with seeing it, and I'm already.
You're already smelling it.
Yeah, can you?
No.
Okay, so let's move to sniff, because there is a lot going on.
But I'm mouth breathing right now, so.
Nice. Why is that okay for you, but weird with the guy?
I don't know. I don't think it's okay for me either.
I don't think it's okay with it. Mouth breather.
My God.
So the wine is very pungent.
That smells like a split grapefruit.
It does, doesn't it? It is intense.
Like you just cut the grapefruit and the little things squirt out, the grapefruit oils squirt out, and you could just smell them all over the air around your face. That's what this smells like.
And it is,
wow.
Yeah, it is bright. It is fresh.
Gorgeous.
It is, there is a lot of that white grapefruit, lighter pink grapefruit. It's not ruby. It doesn't have a sweeter ruby smell. It's definitely leading towards that, almost pomelo in a way too, that white lime citrus.
Do you smell
grapefruit.
Peaches?
Behind that I'm not getting peaches, I'm getting grass. I'm getting like herbally grass.
I get a little like I get peach. I get a warmer peach, and then I do smell the herbs though.
Yeah, and there's like a little bit of tropicality to it as well. There is so much going on the nose
on
this one. This is I say the word pungent, I mean powerful, because there is just a lot going on the nose on this one. It is singing with grapefruit, with citrus, with tropicality. So delicious on the nose. It's already making my mouth water just smelling it.
Yeah, it's stunning. Are we sipping now?
Yeah, so we're on to the third S, because
good,
now that
go.
We've seen it and we've smelled it, those are things that you use those to evaluate whether or not you want to progress with the wine.
Wah!
And if you like the smell and you like the sight, put it in your mouth.
Oh, it's so good.
Isn't it?
It's so good. It's so yummy. Oh, my gosh. It's so yummy and tart and springy, and it's like, it's, what are those, Pop Rocks?
Mm-hmm.
It's like wine Pop Rocks.
Oh, this is amazing.
Right?
So, my mouth is watering. There is great acidity on this one. There is great citric acid. It tastes like it smells in so many ways.
This is a 100-degree summer wine.
It is, yeah.
You have to have this in the middle of summer when you're just, like, drooping from the heat.
Well, I think it's got that refreshing quality to it, but I also think this acidity would go great with like winter foods as well, because it's going to cut through cream with this acidity and that lemon. It's going to go great with seafood any time of the year. I mean, this wine just, it's lively and it's bright and it's fresh and it's happy. It emits this warmth and this love to it, I feel. It's definitely intoning some emotional responses. So I think even in a dark day.
You're right.
That this is a
it'll
wine.
It'll bring the summer to you.
It's summer in a glass. There you go.
It's summer in a glass.
So so on the palate, the flavors are still lingering. So it's a lot of that white grapefruit. What are you getting on the palate?
So I get the pith of the grapefruit on the sides of my mouth. But I still feel that, like I called it peach, you called it tropical. There's a certain mellow warmth in the center of my tongue.
Mm-hmm.
I've never sipped a wine that delineated my my palate so much. And then even on the top of my soft palate, is it weird to taste on your soft palate? But I feel there's a sensation to it. There's a nice warmth. It's not too warm, but it really does. It felt like the first few tastes that my taste buds were like springing like pop rocks.
It really is. I mean, it's so lively that it just ripples across your tongue, and it feels like it's pulling up all that tiredness on your tongue. Just gets lifted. The taste buds are all springing to attention, and it's like if they suddenly had a rave. All your taste buds are now raising their arms and singing to the skies as wine cascades across your palate. And yeah, getting that in your soft palate is totally true, because you do, when you taste stuff, you're tasting through the back of your throat as well as on your tongue. And so, yeah. Bright, fresh, crisp, acidic, delightful, floral, stone fruits, grapefruit, herbal grass qualities to it. Just delicious. Not too hot. Not so acidic that I'm getting heartburn from it either. I mean, we talk about acidity, but it's such a positive acidity.
It's not that tart, like you have to have a beef bourguignon with it. Mm-hmm. It's just a mellow, happy, delightful spring kind of pop.
Tastes like a fresh citrus salad with like peaches and stone fruits, and there's just enough sweet to balance that acidity that you don't regret it and you want to drink more. Mm-hmm. Sometimes a wine like this can just be so overwhelmingly acidic that it's just a regret. And this is not it. This is such a beautifully balanced, lovely wine. Okay, so using all those things that you've just gathered, this is the worst part. Now that we've sipped, now that we've savored, now that we've swallowed.
I have no idea.
Does this wine remind you of anything? Is it familiar to you? Okay.
I'm going to say it's not a Chardonnay.
Yeah, I would say that there's a good reason to say that. Now, why do you think it's not a Chardonnay?
Well, I know that not all Chardonnay is oaky, but I don't get that oak. I don't get the spices. I don't get the buttery feeling, even though it has a mellow feel to it. The center of it has a mellowness.
Okay. So when evaluating a wine, and this is just there's some basic steps, like what you're experiencing, what you're talking about is things that, so there's primary flavors, there's secondary flavors, and there's tertiary flavors. And primary is stuff that you get from the grape. And secondary is stuff that you get from the winemaking process, which involves like barrel.
Okay.
And then tertiary flavors are what you get from like bottle aging, from like old, when it's an older wine. So this wine, I'd say, has got a lot of primary flavors. I'm not getting any, because it's a lot of fruit. Right?
Yeah.
It's a lot of that bright fruit and a lot of that brightness. I'm not getting any secondary stuff on it. And that secondary stuff, because there's no barrel on this. I mean, you're not getting any of that vanilla.
No.
You're not getting any butter. You're not getting any of that creaminess. You're not getting any of the spice notes. So there's none of those secondary characteristics that you would normally get on a wine like a Chardonnay that usually gets barrel treated. So we're probably talking about a wine here that doesn't get barrel treated, which in a lot of cases indicates a certain type of white varietal, because we know that Chardonnay and Viognier and Semillon are wines that frequently get treated with barrel treatment because they improve with that. But this wine does not.
Sauvignon Blanc?
There you go. It is a Sauvignon Blanc.
Really?
It has a lot of the hallmarks of a Sauvignon Blanc. Like a Sauvignon Blanc frequently will have that grapefruit. We'll have that citrus, that really bright citrus. Whereas Chardonnay, even a non-barrel-aged Chardonnay, will have more apple. It'll taste like green apples or red apples. And then you might pick up some honeyed notes or other things. But yeah, Sauvignon Blanc is known for its green grass and grapefruit.
I don't know if I've ever tasted a Sauvignon Blanc. Of course, I don't remember, but I don't think I've tasted a Sauvignon Blanc that has that immediate grapefruit.
Well, and that's very indicative of this type of Sauvignon Blanc, because the more you taste Sauvignon Blanc, because Sauvignon Blanc's grown in a lot of different areas in the world. It started in the Loire Valley in France. And then it is actually one of the parent grapes of the world's most popular grape, Cabernet Sauvignon. So Cab Franc and Sauvignon Blanc, both from the Loire, got together and had a baby. And that baby, Cabernet Sauvignon, moved to the Bordeaux and lived there and then moved to California. So Sauvignon Blanc is also grown in California to great effect. It's one of Napa's great, white wines. And then it's also grown in Australia and New Zealand as well. And New Zealand's really the place that's kind of made Sauvignon Blanc its own. And so when you have a white wine like this, the flavor profile takes you pretty much specifically to one place in the world. Where would you think that place was?
New Zealand.
Yes, you're right.
Okay. You led me there. That's why I said it.
And I can give you a little more on why something this bright and grapefruity would be New Zealand. And that's because, in again, what we're dealing with is old world wines. Fruit is a subsumed quality. It's a second, it's a lower down intensity on older world wines because they don't focus on it as much in the grape growing process. And generally speaking, the soils are much more depleted. They're soils that have been farmed for thousands of years, and therefore they have different things to offer to the growing process than new world soils. And the newer the soil is, the more fruit the wine seems to express. So California is a middle ground between New Zealand and the Loire. Mm. The Loire is very soft. It's understated. It's whispers of grapefruit. It's hints of, you know, of herbaceousness. It's suggestions of that. And then there's this lovely acidity, and it's just a soft, flowing experience. And New Zealand is—it's like a marching band in your mouth. It is citrus and grapefruit and jalapeno and lemongrass and all these bright, savory, herbal, singing citric notes. And depending on who makes the Sauvignon Blanc, sometimes it can be overwhelming. It can be like being in a room where the speakers are turned up to 11.
I'm all about it.
This is so well made.
The bigger, the better.
I hear that. But I don't think you've had a Sauvignon Blanc that was over the top.
Oh, okay. No. Well, so, maybe not.
And California, for the record, is a great balancing point between New Zealand and the Old World and France for making a Sauvignon Blanc because it has elements of both. But what I'll tell you is that this Sauvignon Blanc is a really well-balanced Sauvignon Blanc. It's really well made because sometimes Sauvignon Blancs coming out of New Zealand, if you ever... you know how sometimes things people will pick up a new thing and they'll say, okay, this is it. This is my personality now. It's like, oh, I like books about mysteries. I am now a mystery book reader. That is who I am. I will talk about nothing but that. I will have no other qualities.
Well, teenagers do that a lot.
And adults. There's a lot of people who define themselves by one thing. Yeah. And unfortunately, that happens with wine, too. Like, sometimes, like, a wine will define itself by one characteristic. Like, California Napa Cabs, some winemakers there, they define themselves by one quality, by being big. And if they're not loud, they're not high alcohol, they're not high fruit, they're not explosive, they're not... Burn, right. You know, then they're not doing, they don't think they're doing their job. And unfortunately, I think it's
so
too
American
much,
of us.
Well, there's no balance. There's no nuance.
Yeah,
there's
agreed.
No, there's no, it's all one big punch in the face.
No, you always want the opposites.
You need contrast. You need,
yes.
You need layers. That's what makes a really good script. It makes a really good screenplay. It makes a really
makes
good
a really
story.
Good food.
It makes really good food. It makes really great wine when mm-hmm. you have nuance. And that's what this wine has. They're not overplaying their hand. New Zealand Sauvignon Blancs, which this is, well done.
Thank you.
Are known for, they took on the American market in such a huge way, and they became so big because people in the American market always want more. That's why we have 47 different chip flavors in one grocery store, because we always want more. It's like, what's the new flavor? Because my palate's deadening. So they kept upping the ante on this thing that Americans said they like, that big plosive jalapeno grapefruit thing, to the point where it was overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
So you can get a hold of some Sauvignon Blancs and you almost regret drinking it because it's like drinking paint thinner. It strips your tongue. It strips your palate. You can't taste anything but almost like acid and regret.
We should do a 5-minute mini-sode on a tongue-stripping Sauvignon
Blistering
Blanc.
Sauvignon yeah. Blanc. Well, and that's one of the things that I love about this wine is that it is, you see Sauvignon Blanc, and if you have experience with New Zealand Sauvignon Blancs, you almost approach it with a sense of hesitation. Like, it's like, oh dear, really, we're going to do this? And I don't want that. I don't want people to have that. So this is why I'm so happy to introduce this wine to people, because this wine does it well. It does this nuance. It does this style so well. So this is actually Wairau River Sauvignon Blanc from New Zealand. Here's the bottle.
Ooh.
Cool label.
Very cool label.
And the
Wairau graphic.
Well, in the graphic on it, it shows like a layered wave line going across the label in different colors and different textures.
Is that dirt?
That is actually it's actually a topographical map of the river and the river valley and the different soil types that were laid down by this river. So the Wairau River is in the northern part of the Southern Isle. Mm-hmm. Island in the Marlborough region. And so it comes out of these mountains, and it's about 110 miles long, I think the river is. Mm-hmm. And it comes out of these mountains down a valley, and then it slowly expands out into this plain. And over the years, it's laid down different types of soil. And the people who own this winery, the Roses, back in 1960, they actually had bought some land and they were raising, I had to look this one up, they were raising lucerne and shipping it to Japan. And I'm like,
what is lucerne?
Alfalfa.
It's
like cilantro versus coriander.
They just have a different name for it. Okay.
Yeah. So they were shipping, basically, it's a slightly higher protein grain than hay, and they were shipping it to Japan for their beef cattle. And then in the market in the 70s, gas prices changed everything, so they couldn't afford to ship anymore. So they had to start rethinking what they were going to do. And that's when they discovered that they could grow grapes, really good grapes on their property. It was a bit of a hobby for the parents, I think its name is Phil, and her name was Chris. And I believe Phil and Chris Rose. They had been growing grapes as kind of a hobby, but now they realized they could actually turn it into a thing. It became a new revenue source for them. So they started planting grapes as a cash crop.
So they would sell the grapes to other wineries?
Exactly. And so that became their new business, was converting their lands from alfalfa to, I see that this is the bottle.
I was just going to steal your glass.
Yeah, you're not stealing my glass. Here, there's the bottle. Go! So they changed the whole story of this property and this business, but the Roses did, and they started growing Sauvignon Blanc grapes. And for 20 years, they just were selling grapes. They were just farming and selling grapes. But then their children, who had grown up around this property, came back with this idea and said, essentially, look, Mom, Dad, we think we can do this thing. And so, and these are some of the greatest names, because their son Sam came back and became a winemaker for them. Their son Hamish...
Oh, I love these names.
I love Hamish Rose, who's like spent time being
Hamish.
An abalone diver and other things, and finally came back and says, you know what? I'm going to be the viticulturist. I'm going to grow the grapes. That's going to be my job. And then their daughter, Pip. Pip, Sam, and Rose. It's like a Tolkien story.
Oh, it is. It's like, so good.
Pip, Sam, Hamish, Caroline, let's go on an adventure. Get the ring. We're going down.
Pack the food.
We're going to the North Island. So the Roses became a family business of making and selling their own wine starting in the late 70s, early 80s.
Did Pip do?
So Pip actually manages the tasting room and the restaurant that's on property now. So I'm not sure exactly.
I'm jealous of Pip. I just want you to know.
I think it was in the 90s that they started actually producing their own wine. And so for the last 20 years, the family's been working and running these things together.
That's so cool.
It's really kind of a cool family story. And so it's a family-run business. They produce an amazing wine. And so this wine... to give you some of the details about this wine. This wine, what is this wine as far as alcohol by volume goes?
It has a 93 plus point value. Mm-hmm. So Wine Orbit.
So Wine Orbit, that's a review. It's just a sticker.
Oh, okay.
People love points because it gives them a sense of place. Because unless you listen to a podcast like this, you don't know how to pick wine for yourself. But when you listen to us, you can ignore the points. Choose your own thing. So 13% alcohol by volume, all stainless steel, night harvested grapes to keep the freshness.
Stainless steel what for the newbies?
Stainless steel, so they didn't do anything with oak that would impart flavors to it. So the fermentation happened in stainless steel vats. It was aged and fermented. They did the whole fermentation process with stainless steel, the storage in stainless steel, the filtering and fining to get rid of all the particulate matter in stainless steel, and then they put it into bottles.
And I love that it's stainless steel, because if you look at it, it kind of looks like the shine on stainless steel.
Oh, this is such a great nose on this.
So good.
So honestly, this wine is just fabulous. And it's a fabulous price too, because it doesn't, like the average price is like $15, $16, I believe on wine.com. So if you, I've started a new thing. So if you don't have a local shop where you can go and purchase this wine, you can go into the link in the description and click buy this wine. It'll take you to wine.com right on the page there, and you can click and purchase the wine there and have it shipped to you, which is kind of a cool thing. So I'm just trying to make this easy. I'm trying to remove all the barriers to you having great wines, but I honestly recommend that if you have the opportunity, take in this podcast, show them the description, say, I would like this wine. And if they have it, great. And if they don't, it only take them a couple days usually to get it and bring it into your market. I haven't seen this in many grocery stores, even though it's priced so well. So you should be able to get access to it fairly easily. And I really recommend it. It's an awesome wine.
And if you're in our local area, there's Vino, a wine shop. There's Wanderlust Delicato. There's
Bottles out in the valley. There's Huckleberries, there's Rocket Market up on the South Hill. So there's a lot of local places here that are doing great wine. There's Vine and Wine in the North End up near Mead. So there's that's for the Spokane market. And I realize that the number of you listen to us internationally, and I'm sorry, I have no idea. Go find it somewhere. Order it. I wish you the best of luck. I believe in you, and I know that you can do this.
There you go.
So other than that, I mean, that's the wine today. I love the Wairau River wines. They also do a Pinot Noir. I like their Pinot Noir, but I love their Sauvignon Blanc, I'll be candid. And yeah, that's it. That's the
story
for
today. I'm so happy. Like, you just made my day.
It's such a great wine. It's so awesome to share. And it's just so spritzy and bright. I mean, it's great with lunch. It's great in the
afternoon. It literally makes your nipples pop.
Okay. All right.
It does.
Fantastic.
It's like, ping.
I'm not experiencing that, but everyone, that's why tasting wine is such an individual experience. So, so if you like this podcast, do us a favor. Go to wherever the podcast is that you're hosting and just give us a 5-star review. Rate us, review us. If you have suggestions of things you think we can do better, and some people have sent me some great feedback, you can reach me at alex@drinksomethingamazing.com. You can go to my website, drinksomethingamazing.com, our website, and you can look at all our old podcasts. And we're also on Instagram, Twitter. So, but yeah, definitely rate and review. Give us a like. And if you're the kind of person that has a little extra money and loves to support us, click on the support this podcast link. Buy us a coffee. Every dollar helps because we're parents. We got kids.
And we self-produce.
And we self-produce.
So there you go.
So, all that being said, thank you so much for listening.
Thank you.
I really love sharing wine. I really love trying to take the fear out of it because it's all about the stories. It's all about the people behind these things because every great vintner, if they're lucky, gets maybe 40 chances in a lifetime to make a great wine.
40 summers.
40 summers. That's it. And 40 great chances to make a wine. That's art in that bottle, man. And it's worth the money and it's worth the time. So take the time to savor it, have that experience, and enjoy it. But I got nothing else to say. I'm going to say thank you so much. Go ahead.
I have one thing to say, that we may skip a week because of spring break, and then we'll be back.
And that may happen. So bear with us. Go back and listen to our old podcasts if one doesn't pop up nearby.
1 through 10. We just uploaded 1 through 10 again, which
Okay. Listen with patience because, wow, what a fledgling effort that was. But in the effort of full disclosure, let's get them out there. Everyone deserves to hear everything.
Yeah, and it's good enough. And they're fun and funny and interesting. And we were finding our feet. And you got to start somewhere. So a note to everyone else. We're like toddlers now. But then we were babies.
So now that we're toddlers and drinking alcohol, go find a glass, pop in some earbuds, and join us as we drink something amazing.